Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Morning, everybody, and welcome to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. I'm your host, weekdays at 9 o'clock Central AM. All right, a little bit of housekeeping to go through. If you don't have a local affiliate to pick us up, or if you want to talk about Republic Broadcasting and get others in your circle of influence who don't necessarily have an affiliate near them, you can always go to republicbroadcasting.org. Look at the shows that are available. And you can also stream live as well. If you'd like to spread the word about Republic Broadcasting, you can order 100 generic Republic Broadcasting business cards. They're $8. It includes shipping, and you get a bumper sticker with it. And in order to get that, you just call 800-724-2719 weekdays from 9 to 6 Central Time. You can also send to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664 for the same deal. Now, good buddy of mine by the name of Dave Champion, he has his own show weekdays at 3 o'clock Central right here on the Republic Broadcast Network, the Dave Champion Show. Now, Dave Champion is sponsoring the Dave Champion Show Defensive Handgun Course, May 15, 16, 17, and 18, this year, 2009, out at Front Sight Firearms Training Institute, just outside of Las Vegas. Actually, not too far from our broadcasting studio here in Pahrump, Nevada. Now, there are many different options for this, but the thing is this. If you own a gun, you own ammo and whatnot, you can sign up for this course. It's $400 to attend, and that goes to the Dave Champion Legal Defense Fund. Now, those of you who listen to Dave know what that's about. If not, in short, Dave Champion is the tip of the spear in the tax honesty movement, and he's in the process of taking a one-man against a huge entity fight to the IRS in court. So that goes to the Legal Defense Fund. There are other options when it comes to some memberships out at Front Sight, a gun and gear package at Front Sight and whatnot. You can go online and check that out. You can also call Dave's office and speak to his assistant, Margo. Now, Margo can be reached at Dave's office at 775-751-0811. Let me spit that out to you again. Area code 775-751-0811. You can call Margo to sign up or get some additional information on the course. Now, I left Front Sight in October of 2008. When I left, I was the lead rangemaster and lead instructor trainer. So I was the only guy on staff at that time who was qualified to rangemaster every firearms course on the schedule, from beginning to advanced, handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, M16, precision rifle, all the advanced stuff. And I wrote virtually every curriculum on the schedule. So I have agreed to go with Dave and be there at this class. So you can meet not just one, but two RBN hosts at the Dave Champion Show Defensive Handgun Course, May 15, 16, 17, and 18, 2009. Sign up, call Margo, 775-751-0811. We'll be back after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. Let me read something to you. New York City gunmaker lawsuit fails. 9 years ago, when Rudy Giuliani was mayor of New York City, politicians and bureaucrats grew frustrated that their gun control laws were being bypassed by New Yorkers going out of state to buy firearms. If the nation as a whole couldn't be convinced to ban all handguns, maybe there was another way. New York City filed a lawsuit designed to bankrupt gun makers and drive them out of business by holding them responsible for the actions of criminals who obtain their product. Now, the criminals are obtaining the product illegally. Sort of like allowing traffic accident victims to sue General Motors for misuse of their cars by drunks. Sort of like suing an alcohol manufacturer or a beer company for the actions of someone who was drunk on their product and caused you harm or committed crime. The lawsuit worked its way through the courts until 2005, when Congress enacted the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, designed precisely to block such legal actions. But in 2005, federal judge Jack B. Weinstein in Brooklyn ruled that the lawsuit could proceed over the objection of gun makers, including Beretta USA, Browning Arms, Colt Manufacturing, Glock, and Smith & Wesson. The act bans most lawsuits against the firearms industry, Judge Weinstein concluded, but a narrow exception allowed lawsuits when a gun maker or dealer has knowingly violated state or federal statutes in sales and marketing practices by knowingly selling a weapon to someone who fails a criminal background check, for example. Now, the gun manufacturers don't do that. Here's how it works, much as everything else in commerce. A company makes a product. That product then goes to a distributor or wholesaler. That product then goes to a retailer. The retailer then sells it to the consumer. All right? And everybody's getting a little bit of cut off the top. Everybody gets their piece. That's fine. It's the American way. It's capitalism. Then you've got to realize that everybody within that chain of custody, with this chain from when it's made to when it's sold and purchased by the consumer, they have to handle themselves within certain laws within the firearms community. The city contended that gun makers had made themselves liable under that narrow exception by failing to monitor firearms retailers closely enough and thus allowed guns to end up in the hands of criminals. Now, I got to ask you something here, guys. Where in the world does it say in any law whatsoever that the gun manufacturers have to find out what the retailers do, have to watch them? Therefore, the city argued, the manufacturers had created a, quote, condition that negatively affected the public health or safety and were thus in violation of New York State's public nuisance law. Now imagine that. Can you believe that is really the squiggly line they're trying to draw? But their lawsuit has gone nowhere since. In April 2008, a three-judge panel in the 2nd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals threw it out again, finding the new law to be constitutional. New York's final recourse was to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, which Monday refused to hear the case, quashing the city's last appeal. Backdoor gun prohibition seems to have fallen on hard times of late. Maybe the enemies of the Bill of Rights would be well advised to pick a new target, barring trial by jury, perhaps, or arguing that Congress should indeed, quote, establish a religion. End of that story. So, good for us, bad for them. Liberty and our ability to take on these anti-gun and anti-liberty tyrants has worked. Okay, what we're going to do from here is we're going to talk today about selection of firearms and their use. All right? Now, specifically, we're going to talk about defensive nature of guns. I'm going to forewarn you, I may sidetrack off into some of the sporting things using some examples. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you this. Right now, I own the a smaller number of actual guns than what I did, say, 10 or 12 years ago before I really knew what I was doing. When I really learned what I was doing, I didn't need to have as many guns. What I ended up doing is the guns I've got now are fewer in quantity, however, much higher in quality, and also don't tend to be in such a specific niche. Now, I do have some niche guns, I'll forewarn you. I have a 416 Remington Magnum, which is designed for African caliber guns, for the Big Five. It fits the Big Five. You have to have a 375 caliber bullet or larger to hunt the Big Five in Africa, right? And I'll also do large North American game, such as large moose or elk, bear, buffalo / bison. Certainly for some of the biggest things like Alaskan brown bear or grizzly, this gun would work. But suffice it to say, it's a Remington 700 with a Swarovski scope on it. It's a beautiful gun. It's the gun and the scope together are worth quite a bit of money. The ammunition's about $7 per round, so I've hand-loaded a couple hundred rounds at a dramatic savings to Master Specs. Anyhow, I have a niche gun. I have a couple of other niche guns. I have a 22-250 with an electronic trigger. It's called Neutronics Remington 700, and that is for varmint hunting. So I have a couple of niche guns, but generally, for the most part, I buy guns for a specific purpose. But it's going to be wider a little bit. So let's talk about a little bit about defensive guns. So first of all, a lot of people tend to go towards a handgun. That's fine. Let's talk about handguns to start with, since that seems to be a rather popular way to go. I have people get a hold of me all the time, friends, friends of friends, family members. Hey, you know, I'm thinking about buying a gun. What should I get? All right. Well, that's like calling somebody and saying, you know, I'm thinking about buying a car. What should I get? Well, what you use for the car? Is it going to be a car for daily transportation to and from work on the streets? Well, in that case, you can get a little economy car. Is it going to be a vehicle for transporting your kids and their friends to soccer practice? Well, a Honda Accord's not going to work too well for that. You might need a minivan or an SUV. So it's the same sort of deal, all right? What kind of gun should I get? So I'll ask you the same questions I ask them. What purpose does that serve? Are you going to go hunting? Or is this for self-protection? Well, it's self-protection. Okay. Is it self-protection in the home? Is it self-protection carrying concealed to be out and about or even open if you're in an open carry state? Protection in your car when you travel? What's it for? All right. So we'll hit a couple of these. Well, self-protection in the home. Good. Do you have kids in the house? Yes or no? It will help decide. Not so much on the gun itself, but potentially the condition you keep it in, rather where it's secured. There are ways to keep firearms secured from children that are still readily accessible within their particular container or how you keep it. So, what gun specifically is it that we're talking about? Well, when it comes to defensive nature of guns, I like two types, and two types only. I like semi-autos and I like revolvers. That's the two types I like. I don't like single shots. That's kind of facetious, bit of a joke. Okay, semi-autos that I like. I tend to like the ones that are a little bit more simple to operate, especially for those who are new to guns, such as a Glock, or a Springfield XD, or a Smith & Wesson M&P, or a Kahr, spelled K-A-H-R. Very simple to use guns. They don't have any external levers or gadgets that you have to manipulate before pressing the trigger on the gun. All right? They don't have a bunch of decocking levers and what. And every time you press the trigger, it's the same amount of pressure that it takes to get the gun to go off. Some guns, they call them double action guns, or double singles really, where the first press of the trigger might take 10 to 12 pounds of pressure for the first round to go, and then after that, they're 3 or 4 pounds worth of pressure to go. A little more difficult to operate. They tend to have levers, like decocking levers, and these external slide or frame-mounted safeties that do all kinds of stuff. Like on the Beretta or the second and third generation Smith & Wessons, they have this decocking lever that when it's in the down position, the trigger doesn't work. Additionally, there are some guns where when you take the magazine out, regardless of where this decocking lever or safety may be, the trigger doesn't work. In a defensive situation, I find those to be undesirable. I find a very simple to operate gun to be desirable. Glocks, Springfield XDs, Smith M&Ps, and then you can take it up a notch to 1911s, which is where I generally sit, Glocks and 1911s. I started off with Glocks, and I still own quite a few, and then I moved into 1911s. Now, here's the thing. Glocks, Springfield XD, Smith & Wesson, M&P, which stands for Military and Police, those sorts of guns are very easy to operate. The CAR, K-A-H-R, very easy to operate. If you want to have a good-natured, good-quality, very reliable defensive gun, go with these types of guns. They're generally polymer-framed gun. Double-stack magazine. Simple to use. Point. Use the sights. Press smoothly. All the trigger presses are the same and very reliable. If you want to have more of a relationship with your handgun, you then move into a 1911. Now, some people start off with a 1911. I did not. I actually found the transition from Glocks into 1911s to be rather easy. The simple-to-use guns are good. I actually heard a guy at a gun store one time advise someone who had never owned a handgun before, if they're going to buy a gun, they should buy one with all these levers and bells and whistles and decockers and magazine release safeties. And I asked him why he would steer the person that way, and he said, well, because they're easier to use. My response to that was, no, they're not. I told him what I just told him. We'll continue this discussion on selection of firearms.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Karn, 1-800-313-9443.
So here we are talking about selection of guns. Now, keep in mind that the fit of the gun in your hand plays an important role, and the caliber plays an important role. Now, some people think a gun is a gun, which isn't true. It's like saying a car is a car, or a meal is a meal, or, you know, alcohol is alcohol. There's different stuff out there. Keep in mind, for defensive use, the minimum caliber, anyone should consider is 9mm, and that's bare minimum. It's just not that powerful. You get something, I mean, quite honestly, a 22 long is a little bit better than a 25 ACP, which we've actually seen bounce off of glass in ballistics tests. So 9mm is basically rather pathetic. Basically minimum. The 25 is pathetic. So then above that, you'd get into other things, such as a 357 Magnum or a 40 caliber Smith & Wesson, 10mm, 45 ACP. Now, I'll tell you this. When it comes to caliber selection, something that I experienced years ago back in my police days, I spent a day at the Clark County, Nevada coroner's office. And I just spent a day there learning about what goes on and how their investigations go, things that might help me in some of the investigations I do, being a good cop and whatnot. So I spoke to the chief pathologist at that time, who had 26 years, over a quarter century on the job, of doing autopsies. And in Clark County, everybody gets an autopsy, regardless of religious beliefs or family concerns, unless they died directly under the care of a physician. Even then still, sometimes they get an autopsy if requested by the family, for medical malpractice and whatnot. So this guy had spent 26 years digging around dead bodies, digging around bodies that were shot in a lot of cases, and this even was back during the heyday, if you will, of some of the organized crime from back east, the mafia that were in Vegas, that pretty much got pushed out in the mid-80s. So I asked him, what caliber, with all the whiz-bang rounds, and at the time, you know, the Black Talons or you know, the Starfire or the, you know, the Hydra Shock, all this stuff. You know, what has he seen come through here that actually stops people? And he told me, of all the bullets he's ever dug out of all the corpses on his table that he's done autopsies on, the 230 grain ball round from a 45 ACP is the one thing that is sure to stop. Now, this coming from a pathologist with 26 years experience. So, a 230 grain ball round, 45 ACP. So, then he went on to tell me, said, that's why I carry a Colt Commander Series 70 with 230 grain ball, 45 ACP. That's about all I needed to hear. 45 works. Now, the 40 caliber Smith & Wesson is an excellent round. It was basically an offshoot of the 10 millimeter, which is a very powerful round. 10 millimeter fits between the power of a 357 Magnum and a 44 Magnum, almost dead center in the middle between the two, pardon the pun, where the 41 Magnum was originally designed to be. However, the 41 Magnum had a lot of power, and it was about 96% as powerful as a 44. So the 10 millimeter fits in the middle. For some people, that's a bit of power in a rather large gun to control. So the FBI did a bunch of stuff. They're looking for the ultimate round. What they decided is a downloaded 10 millimeter works great. So then what Smith & Wesson did was they said, well, heck, for that matter, it's downloaded enough. We can trim the casing down to the length of a 9mm casing and put a 10mm bullet in it. We'll call it the 40 Smith & Wesson. So it's a bigger bullet by 1mm than, or about four calibers, than the 9mm. And it's just a little bit downloaded from a 10mm. Now, 10mm rocks. 40 caliber is a little puny in comparison, but it's a pretty good round. And it's probably the one of the, if not the most popular police rounds out there now, because you can have a relatively powerful round in a gun designed for either a larger person, like designed for a 45, or designed for a 9mm. It's very versatile. So, those are your caliber selections, really. 9mm, 357, 40, 10mm, 45 ACP for defensive rounds. Some people carry 38. Well, 38 is a little bit weak, especially if it's coming out of a short-barreled gun. Maybe like 38 plus P, which is plus power. Those are some of your options for caliber. Now, keep in mind, you want to find a gun that fits good in your hand and has a good caliber and has reasonable operating features. All right? Reasonable, so it's not too difficult to operate. It's rather simple for when you need to use it. All right? We're going to talk a little bit more about these selections when we come back from this next break. We will get into basically some of the shotgun and rifle selections and what you might consider for home defense when you return.
Assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karn. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so we spoke a bit about handguns. Now, let's talk about guns for home defense. And there's a raging debate. It's a manufactured debate is really what it is when it comes to what gun should I use in the home to protect myself. You can read about it in just about every month of just about every gun magazine. Oh, what is it? It used to be the 9 versus 40 versus 45. Thank God that that doesn't come around much anymore because that was overwritten about 700,000 times. Now it's, what is it? Is it handgun, shotgun, rifle? What is it? Well, you know, the people that write in the gun magazines don't want to offend anybody who already advertises with them or could potentially advertise with them, so they're generally very vague. Now, I know people who, for their own reasons, keep different handgun, shotgun, whatever it is, within their house, and that's their home defense weapon. I know a guy that keeps an AR-15 in his house and keeps electronic earmuffs on it so he can hear the people that are coming around and he can shoot them with a rifle. That's, you know, not exactly my ball of wax. This particular, he knows what he's doing. I mean, he's a professional trainer. He's been doing this for a while. And it's just not my cup of tea, especially since that rifle sitting right there, in order to get it going, can make noise if it's not already going. And if you happen to have kids in the house, having a loaded rifle next to your bed is not generally the best of ideas. So I'll tell you some of the other options. Is you have handguns, you have shotguns, you have rifles. You also have submachine guns if you can get them in your state and you can possess them in your town. And they're available. Plus, they're really expensive. But I got to tell you, of all the three, I really like the idea of a submachine gun. Now, I don't own one. I can get one in Nevada. But the thing is, you got to go through all the paperwork, the process, register it as what's called an NFA gun, a National Firearms Act, whatever, an NFA Class 3 fully automatic or suppressed gun. Now, I am a qualified submachine gun range rush. By the way, let's get the distinction between machine gun and submachine gun. A machine gun fires a rifle caliber round. A submachine gun shoots a handgun caliber round. So, if you have a 9mm fully automatic gun, that's a submachine gun. If you have a 5.56 millimeter or 223 caliber rifle that is fully auto, that is a machine gun. And you can have the same gun, as it looks, qualifies you the machine gun or a submachine gun, an M16 that fires a 5.56 millimeter or 223. That is a machine gun. You could actually convert the gun to fire 9mm, and now what looks much like the same gun, actually is now a submachine gun. So there you go. I like the idea of a submachine gun because you can shoot heavy subsonic rounds, so you don't get this a round that travels anything beyond about 1,050 feet per second. Well, you actually get a little bit of a supersonic crack, and that can really damage hearing, which is one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of having a rifle to defend in the house, because they're really loud and they will permanently damage your hearing. 12-gauge shotguns with double-aught buck is a good way to go. Here's the deal. A handgun, you can only put two hands on. You most likely, statistics will show it'd be in the middle of the night, and you're going to be kind of groggy. So you can only put two hands on a handgun. With a long gun, be it a rifle, shotgun, or submachine gun, you can actually have both hands on the gun, and you mount it to your shoulder. And then if you actually have to bring the gun up to shoot, you then get a cheek weld, so you have between 3 and 4 points of contact with this gun. Plus, a long gun's a little bit more visually intimidating to somebody that may see you from a distance to where they have the opportunity to give up or run. Now, if you come around a corner and you're right on top of somebody, regardless of what you have, most likely you're looking at a fight. So you need to know how to handle yourself if you get into a struggle for the gun and you happen to have a handgun or a long gun. They can be very difficult to struggle with the bigger that they are. However, the bigger the gun, the more bang for the buck, the better you can actually defend yourself, your family, your property. So, 12-gauge shotgun is a good idea, and a lot of people debate. Well, here's the idea. You can have birdshot, buckshot, or slugs. Unfortunately, some of the worst information you can get on self-defense, selection of guns, and selection of ammunition comes from people who work at gun stores. Not all of them, but the vast majority comes from folks behind the sales counter. Why? Well, some of them might have some police experience, some might have some military experience, but most of them have neither. However, they consider themselves well-read within the gun culture and spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year on subscriptions to all their favorite gun magazines, and they look up all this stuff. You know, and then they sell other people into being what I refer to as tactically autonomous. That's where you get someone who goes in and buys the most expensive rifle at his favorite gun store, and then buys all this gear like this ballistic vest, and then a tactical vest, and then the cool boots, and the tactical pants, and the tactical goggles and the helmet and all this stuff to try and look really cool, like they're some sort of, you know, tier two military operator or a SWAT guy, right? So they figure throwing all the money at this will make them tactically autonomous. All this gear will somehow turn them into some just gun god that can actually go in and run everything in the world and be this tactical master. Well, it ain't the truth. I'd like to give them what I refer to as a tactical lobotomy, where we get them out of all that excess BS gear and teach them sight alignment, sight trigger, and trigger control, gun handling and marksmanship, right? Gun handling and marksmanship is really what they need to be taught. You don't need all this gear. You need gun handling and marksmanship. If you know how to operate a gun, basically any operable gun will work. It'll do, right? Most important rule in a gunfight, bring a gun. From there, Bill's credence of gunfighting rules, bring the biggest gun with the biggest caliber and the most ammunition that you can. Because you cannot have too much ammunition or time in a gunfight. Generally, if you're lacking either one's going to be time to get good hits, and two is going to be ammunition. Neither of what you can waste. Rule three, bring your friends with the same type of guns. Bring your buddies with the big, high-capacity guns if you're going to be in a gunfight, and you know it. Now, if you know you're headed into a gunfight, you really probably don't want to carry a handgun. Handgun is really a backup or an emergency. Like, I'm not expecting a gunfight. I'm prepared for one, but I'm not really expecting it. So I'm going to carry this just in case. That's what a handgun's purpose is for, defensively speaking. All right? If you know you're going into a gunfight, rifle or a shotgun is a good way to go. Now, some people buy these carbines that shoot. They are a long gun, you know, set up like a rifle would be, that shoot a handgun caliber. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of those unless they fire full auto, unless they're a machine gun. Of course, you got to go through all the registration and whatnot. They are legal in this country, but they're very expensive because we got completely shafted in the Firearm Owners Protection Act of May 1986. We'll talk about that another time on the radio. You can research it yourself. 11th hour amendment to ban the private sale and ownership of any fully automatic firearm manufactured beyond May of 86. So anything that's out there in the public now that's owned legally has been manufactured pre-1986, because what will happen is through attrition and whatnot, these things will price themselves out of the market or simply just break and not be repaired, blah, blah, blah. Anyhow. However, for self-defense, a pistol-caliber carbine, which would be, you know, shorter in stature, it'd have to have at least a 16-inch barrel to be legal. So get some with a 16-inch barrel that has a stock. It's easy to run. You can put bullets in there that go slower than 1,050 feet per second, so you don't have to worry about permanent hearing loss. And you can move around your house and use that. And, you know, with a handgun, handgun calibers are wimpy when it comes to people. So the common response that most professional trainers will respond to is 2 to 3 rounds and then assess. 2 to 3 rounds out of a handgun caliber and then assess. So that would be the same if you have a handgun or if you've got a handgun caliber shoulder-mounted carbine. You would do 2 to 3 rounds and assess, as professed by most professional trainers within the country. Now, some say shoot them to the ground. Be generous, ammo's cheap. Life is precious, shoot them to the ground. Okay, well, that's a philosophy. The thing is, you have to also worry about the second and third issues. The first issue is a bad guy. Issue two is when law enforcement arrives after shooting. Issue three are any potential civil liabilities. So you've got problem one, which is a bad guy. Then you've got your next issues that come up. That's criminal and civil liabilities. So deal with the first problem, then deal with the other two issues. And, you know, how many rounds you put into the bad guy is one of them. Let's move on again. We're at shotguns. We're talking about that and where you can get some bad information. A lot of people profess, use birdshot, like very small little pellets where there's a whole bunch of them in your gun for home defense. That is a crock of dung. Do not use birdshot in your shotgun for defensive uses. Use that for shooting birds. whatever you would shoot something that weighs a good couple hundred, 200-300 pounds with, is what you would keep in your gun. If you would shoot a 240-pound deer with birdshot and expect it to get anything other than a flesh wound, you're sorely mistaken. Same thing with a human being, 240-pound human being. All right? Would you shoot it with buckshot to stop the deer? Well, yes. So guess what you should do with your defensive shotgun? You should shoot buckshot, double-aught buck. Some people even go so far as to use triple-aught buck. That's even larger. Now, double-aught buck, depending on the manufacturer, get between 6 and 8 .32-caliber pellets that are lead balls that fire out at the same time in the same wad that have this expanding conical pattern going towards their adversary, which is nice. That's like shooting them with a hypervelocity 32 ACP 8 to 9 times at the same instant. That's pretty damn good knockdown punch. So double-aught buck is readily available. You can buy it. That's good stuff. Now, with the shotgun, you have to do what's called patterning. You got to take your gun and a bunch of different brands of double-aught buck and fire several of them at the same sheet of paper and find out how your gun patterns. Stand at, you know, reasonable distance, 5 yards, 7 yards, something like that. I usually do 5 yards if it's a defensive shotgun, and I will fire the different double-aught buck from different manufacturers, different brands, be it full power or the reduced what are called tactical loads that have a little bit less power. Those work great, by the way. They don't rock you on your heels so much, and they have great knockdown performance shown on adversaries, especially in police shootings. That's really, they call them tactical loads. They're really kind of a reduced power buckshot because full-powered buckshot is a little excessive on the average human being. You don't need quite so much power. However, you want to have the full-powered ones if you do go after game because they generally have thicker hides. Back to self-defense on it. So we've engaged this target, this paper target, with, say, 10 rounds of this double-aught buck, maybe 20, to get an idea of where the pattern hits. Then we go to a new target with a different brand and fire about 10 of those and see how they pattern. Find the one that patterns best, which is usually your tighter pattern. You don't want to have a shot into a bad guy and have a stray pellet go off somewhere else, potentially hit or ricochet off and hit a loved one. You want them all on the adversary. If you're firing a round of double-aught buck that has 8 to 9 pellets in it, all 8 to 9 pellets belong on the bad guy that you're firing at. That's it. That's the way it goes. Now, rifles are excellent for stopping people. Really difficult to manage inside an enclosed home, unless you've got very large, vast expanses of even the biggest modern mansions. It's doable. It's very doable. However, you've got to take some things into concern. Some rifle rounds, quite honestly, will over-penetrate bad guys and continue on downrange, striking what or whom we don't know. Some are designed to tumble, as in where they go into a mass, a mainly liquid mass, such as a human body or an animal, and they tumble, like the 5.56 millimeter rounds or 223 that you would find in, say, like an AR-15. Designed to tumble. Now, most of them do. Certain ones don't. Especially the military has found that their green-tipped body armor-piercing rounds don't tumble unless they go through body armor. And in the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan, when they shoot bad guys there that aren't wearing body armor, oftentimes the bullet just goes right through them and keeps on going downrange. It fails to tumble because of the design of the bullet. That's what their issue. They've got to deal with it. So now they've got to put more rounds on the bad guy. You know, other large game rifles will often over-penetrate as well. Some of those things are just a little bit heavy to fire at a human being. However, you can find the right gun on the right caliber. You just got to deal, quite honestly, with the length of the gun and the noise. If you're going to shoot that thing indoors without hearing protection, hopefully you're already half deaf or there, because you're going to be after firing just a single round. So the option then would be to have electronic hearing protection you can put on. You don't want to have the earmuffs because you can't hear stuff. The electronics, the high-quality electronics, you can turn on and turn up, and it'll actually amplify sound around the house. which is actually good regardless of the gun that you may be protecting your home with. So, I'm a fan of shotguns for the home. However, if you've got kids around and you don't want to have it sitting next to your bed, there's different conditions you can keep it in. I know a number of people, as a matter of fact, a former colleague and supervisor of mine, when he's out of town, his wife keeps a 12-gauge shotgun but does not keep around in the chamber. So she's got to run the action. She's actually got to release the action, run the action, and run it, which you've got to be a little heads up to do. However, now he's a professional. He's trained his wife. She knows how to do it. So you have to decide on your own in your home. It's got to be safe enough, especially if you've got kids or guests that come in. You've got to keep it away from untrained or irresponsible people. You've got to have that responsibility. It sickens me, absolutely sickens me, when news reports come out about people that have kids or the kids' friends or something, or a guest that gets a hold of a gun, has a negligent discharge, and causes death or serious bodily injury to an unintended innocent party. Do not be the person in the position to allow that to happen. Have some responsibility. Only your home, your condition, your guests, your occupants in your house can dictate how to do it in your house. I keep a 10mm Glock next to my bed if something comes up immediately. If not, within rather close proximity, if I can get to it from sounds on the other part of the house, I've got a loaded, double-aught buck-loaded 12-gauge shotgun. Continuing after the break.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so we talked quite a bit about selection of guns and even some of the ammunition. Now let's talk a little bit about handgun ammunition. People seem to go after this defensive ammunition, namely hollow points. Now, hollow points, the idea behind a hollow point is it goes into a body and it expands. It kind of mushrooms. It peels outward and becomes larger, peels back, and keeps pushing through. The idea is not to over-penetrate the person that's shot with a handgun round. And it's basically every police officer and every police department in the country carries a hollow point. So the debate there is, should we have them? Some areas of the country, I think Boston, and I think Massachusetts is one of them, you can't have a hollow point ammunition. Matter of fact, in Massachusetts, as I understand, you can't even shoot at a humanoid silhouette target. It can only be like a bullseye sort of thing, which is ridiculous. This is a training issue, which we'll get to in another show. However, for this hollow point deal, I don't shoot hollow points. I shoot ball ammo. Or if I'm carrying a 40 caliber gun, which is quite often, I carry a Glock 23, I've got a couple of 1911s, in 40 caliber, I've got a Glock 22 in 40 caliber. I like 40 caliber. They have a truncated cone. It's kind of like ball ammo, but it's kind of cut off and flattened in the front. Now, here's the deal. I challenge you to find basically just about any case out there to where someone's been shot in a good center hit, like center of mass, thoracic sort of area up in your thorax, up in that area with a handgun round, and it over-penetrate, continuing through them, and cause any sort of serious bodily injury or death to anyone or anything behind it. Now, I've made it a bit of a study. Now, one came out recently. An old story came up in New York City about ball ammo out of a 9mm gun from an off-duty police officer. Bullet went through somebody and hit somebody else. The thing is that was a poor shot. If I remember correctly, it was through some of the skin of the arm. That's not the area you want to hit. So you want to find out if that is absolutely necessary. Penetration, getting more stuff hurt, is more important and more useful in stopping a bad guy than shallow, larger wounds. You don't want to have a shallow, larger. You want to have, if you can get a larger hole, shoot a larger bullet. You know, as a buddy of mine, Jared Adams, told me once upon a time, a 9mm and a 40 may expand, but a 45 will never shrink. So, with that being said, if you shoot ball ammo into somebody, it's going to go deeper in. Now, there was a case of a gun shop owner, a bad guy comes in, waving a gun, shouting commands, with a gun pointed at the gun shop owner. Gun shop owner pulls out a 10mm semi-automatic gun, fires two shots into the bad guy's chest. Now, that's a 200-grain, basically ball ammo, going at 1,250 feet per second. For those of you who don't know, that's really impressive. That's a hot load. Goes into the guy's chest, comes out his back, and hits tempered plate glass behind the guy. For those of you who don't know, tempered plate glass shatters at 3 to 5 PSI. The glass didn't shatter at all. The bullets hit the glass and fell harmlessly to the floor. So now, bad guy's been shot twice. He's got four bleeding holes instead of two. If you or I were behind him and we got hit with those rounds that exited, what would have happened to us? Possibly a bruise. Certainly not broken skin if we're wearing any sort of clothing. I hope you learned a little bit today. If you'd like to email me any comments on today's show, bill@2aradio.com. Thank you for listening.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedom? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.